What do you actually receive when you buy a great business below its absolute floor? I mean, it sounds like a simple question, right? But the answer fundamentally dismantles how most Wall Street analysts value stocks.
It really does.
Yeah, so forget guessing future growth rates. Forget tweaking risk premiums until your spreadsheet looks, you know, pristine. Today, we're stripping investing down to pure, undeniable arithmetic.
Arithmetic, exactly.
Right. We're exploring an intellectually rigorous article from the Average and Up collection. And, well, our mission today is to completely invert the traditional approach to valuation. Typically, that approach relies heavily on market sentiment and, you know, endless assumptions. But today, we're leaving the guesswork entirely behind.
Completely behind.
Yeah. We're going to examine a framework based entirely on structural certainty.
And it's a truly profound shift in perspective. You know, traditional financial models boast incredible precision, but they often possess, well, absolutely zero accuracy.
Yeah.
We are moving away from that trap. We're anchoring ourselves to absolute mathematical realities.
Mm-hmm.
So the article outlines three structural layers of a great business.
The gap, the gift, and the guarantee, right?
Yes, exactly. The gap, the gift, and the guarantee. And what makes this framework so compelling is how it uses a concept called the free growth premium. It uses that to connect the distinct philosophies of Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, and Charlie Munger into a single unified architecture.
Which is fascinating. And we're going to unpack the mechanics of all three of those layers. But, you know, before we can understand the gap, the gift, and the guarantee, we have to dismantle that traditional valuation model you just mentioned.
Right. We have to clear the deck.
Yeah. We need to establish what the article calls the absolute floor. So why is the standard way of valuing a company so flawed to begin with?
Well, mainly because it's built entirely on projections. I mean, think about how a typical analyst values a company. They estimate the cash flows the business might produce over the next, say, 10 years.
Right, the classic DCF model.
Exactly. Then they discount those future cash flows back to today's value using a rate that blends the risk-free rate of a government bond with some arbitrary risk premium.
Keyword being arbitrary.
Very arbitrary.
Yeah.
And finally, they tack on a terminal value representing what the business might be worth a decade from now.
Right.
The inherent problem there is that every single assumption in that chain is uncertain. The growth rate is a guess. The risk premium is a guess. The terminal value is literally a guess built upon other guesses.
A house of cards, basically.
Precisely. So the Averaging Up article proposes a much simpler, grounded absolute. Instead of projecting uncertain growth rates and discounting for risk, you just remove both of those variables entirely.
Okay, so we strip out the guesswork. Let's walk through how we actually calculate this floor. The starting material is the business's current free cash flow, right?
Yes, current free cash flow.
But I want to pause here because the article makes a very specific distinction between free cash flow and reported net income. Why can't we just look at the bottom line on the income statement? I mean, that's what everyone looks at.
Right, the famous EPS.
Yeah.
Well, because net income is an accounting construct, while free cash flow is a physical reality.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's use a tangible example. Think about a high-quality software business. Suppose they acquire a smaller company and gain a valuable patented technology.
Sure.
Accounting rules dictate that they have to amortize or, you know, gradually write off the value of that acquired intangible asset over many years.
Okay.
Now, that write-off is a non-cash charge. It reduces their reported net income on paper, but no actual cash is leaving the business's bank account.
Wait, so the accountants are essentially subtracting a phantom cost.
Exactly, a phantom cost.
So the business might report, say, $100 million in net income. But if there's $20 million in amortization, there is actually $120 million in physical cash generated that year.
Yes, that is the vital distinction. Wall Street often prices a business based on that highly visible but artificially lowered net income figure. But to find our absolute floor, we must build on actual cash generated. The real free cash flow for premium businesses, especially those with low capital expenditures and high non-cash charges, well, it can easily exceed their reported net income by 20% or more.
Wow, 20% is huge. Okay, so once we have that real physical cash flow figure, how do we calculate the absolute floor?
You take that current free cash flow and you assume the business will never grow another dollar. Zero growth forever.
Zero growth.
Right. And you also assume zero risk, meaning you discount that cash flow at the risk-free rate, which is the current yield on a treasury bond.
Okay, I follow.
So if the risk-free rate is 5%, The mathematics dictate that you simply multiply the free cash flow by 20. That establishes the absolute lowest defensible value of the business as a perpetuity. It isn't a target price.
Right.
It isn't a fair value estimate. It's an arithmetic baseline.
Okay. If I can draw an analogy here, that sounds exactly like pricing a bond.
Yes.
Because if I purchase a treasury bond that yields 5%, I'm getting that yield with total certainty, right? And I'm getting absolutely zero growth.
Exactly.
Therefore, if a business is generating a 5% free cash flow yield with structural certainty, it must mathematically be worth at least as much as that government bond.
The bond analogy is the perfect foundation. When you buy at the floor, you effectively own a bond equivalent. Everything that happens above that floor is something the bond can never offer you. And that brings us directly to the first of our three layers, the gap.
The gap.
Right. When the market occasionally prices a business below this absolute floor, it creates the gap. Let's say the market offers the business at 15 times free cash flow instead of that floor price of 20.
So if the floor is 20 and the market price is 15, that's a 25% discount to the absolute minimum value.
Yes. And that discount is Benjamin Graham's classic margin of safety, but distilled into its purest, most conservative form. It's not a discount to some estimated intrinsic value based on future projections. It is a rare immediate discount to a zero growth perpetuity. It requires absolutely no growth from the business to generate a profit for the investor.
Because it's already mispriced.
Exactly. Right. If the market simply corrects its temporary panic and the valuation returns to the floor of 20, you capture that difference. Your profit stems entirely from the market's mispricing of a known mathematical quantity.
Okay, I have to push back on this premise, though, because as elegant as the math is, we are talking about premium businesses here. How often does the market actually offer a truly great business at a discount to a zero growth perpetuity? I mean, the market can be inefficient, but it's rarely that blind to quality.
It's a completely fair challenge. The reality is that it's incredibly rare.
Yeah.
The market may not always fully appreciate the nuances of a great business's architecture, but it almost always prices them well above their perpetuity value. You generally only see the gap appear during severe market panics, macroeconomic dislocations, or, you know, brutal sector rotations.
Like a structural sell-off.
Right. It happens in those brief, chaotic moments when the market collectively forgets what the business actually is and sells indiscriminately.
Okay, so buying at the floor is a phenomenal safety net, but you just admitted those discounts almost never happen.
True.
So if we aren't relying on a once-in-a-decade market crash to get rich, what is the actual engine driving the profit?
That realization that the gap is precious but remarkably rare leads to the deepest insight in the article.
Which is?
That the gap is Graham's gift, but it's not the main engine of wealth creation. The true engine is the growth, which brings us to the second layer, the gift.
Okay, let's unpack the gift, because this is where the inversion of traditional valuation really begins to show its power.
Mm-hmm.
The floor price, as we established, strictly assumes zero growth.
Yes.
But a great business doesn't deliver zero growth. Driven by its competitive advantages or structural tailwinds, it might deliver 10, 15, or 20% annual growth in free cash flow.
And because you bought at or near the floor, that growth was entirely excluded from your purchase price.
Right.
The investor who buys at the floor acquires a perpetuity of today's cash flow. Therefore, all the growth that arrives tomorrow is entirely free.
That is the gift.
That is the gift. And what's vital to understand is that the gift compounds internally. In year one, the free cash flow is simply what you paid for. But in year two, if the business grows at 15%, the cash flow is higher. And you paid absolutely nothing for that increase.
Zero.
Zero. By year five, the cash flow has doubled. By year 10, it is four times the original amount. The distance between what you paid for, zero growth, and what you actually receive widens exponentially every single year.
So, if I buy a treasury bond at 5%, I get $50 a year on my $1,000 investment forever. It never changes.
Never.
Year one, $50. Year 30, $50. Yeah. How does that compare to this accelerating coupon on a business growing internally at 15%?
Well, the first year looks identical. Your yield is 5%. But because the business is growing its underlying cash flow entirely internally without requiring new capital from you, that math shifts dramatically. By year five, the yield on your original cost isn't 5% anymore. It's 8.7%.
Wait, so I'm making over 8% purely on my initial cost, just from holding it?
Just from the internal growth of the business.
Oh, wow.
And it gets better. By year 10, the yield on your initial investment hits 20%, and by year 15, you are earning an astounding 41% annually on your original cost.
41%, that's incredible. So the bond investor locked in a fixed rate, but we locked in a rate that physically accelerates.
Exactly.
The starting yield is identical, but the trajectory of wealth creation is completely different.
And that accelerating coupon isn't just theoretical math on a spreadsheet. The article is very careful to detail how this acceleration manifests physically to the investor.
Right.
It does so through two distinct mechanisms, the advance and the mechanism.
Okay, let's look at those mechanisms, starting with the advance.
Yeah.
How does that actually put money in my pocket?
The advance is the dividend. From the moment you purchase the business, it begins paying cash directly into your account. It might start small, perhaps a 1% or 2% yield, but it is a tangible return that grows annually as the free cash flow grows.
Okay.
The dividend serves as physical proof that the ever-increasing coupon is real. More importantly, it acts as a cash advance that physically reduces your effective cost basis.
Makes sense.
Every dollar you receive in dividends shortens the duration of your risk. Eventually, your cost basis is reduced to a point where even a stagnant share price represents a highly successful investment.
I see. Well, I want to look closely at the second mechanism, share buybacks, because this operates entirely independently of market sentiment.
No, absolutely.
Right, because if you're managing your own portfolio right now, think about the anxiety of waiting for other investors to validate your thesis. You buy a stock, and then you just hope Wall Street realizes how great the company is and bids the price up.
Yeah, you're at the mercy of the market. But share repurchases remove that anxiety through pure arithmetic.
How so?
Suppose our business generates significantly more free cash flow than it needs to maintain its structural advantage. Management uses that excess cash to go into the open market and buy their own stock, essentially destroying those shares.
So if I own 10% of a business with 100 shares, I have 10 shares.
Right.
If the company buys back 20 shares from other people, there are only 80 left. So my 10 shares now represent 12.5% of the company. My slice of the pie just grew, and I didn't have to spend a single dime.
Right. And to take that a step further, the underlying earnings and free cash flow per remaining share increase mechanically. That forces price convergence over time.
Hmm.
The broader market doesn't have to recognize the value of the business right away. The company uses its own cash flow to force the share price upward simply by reducing supply.
So you're no longer waiting for the market's validation. The business is physically manufacturing your return. It's a completely self-contained wealth creation engine.
That independence from the market's opinion is the hallmark of a truly great investment. But we need to quantify just how powerful this internal compounding engine actually is. Let's run the numbers on the mathematical proof provided in the article, which compares different assets over a 20-year horizon.
Yeah, let's put some concrete numbers to this. We're looking at a standard 20-year period.
We could start with a standard 5% treasury bond. Over 20 years, if you reinvest the interest, you will end up with roughly 2.65 times your original investment.
Okay. And if we look at the broader stock market, the S&P 500, based on historical averages, will return about 6.7 times your investment over those same two decades.
Right. Now we introduce the great business growing its free cash flow at 15% annually. If you buy it at that 20 times floor, meaning you successfully capture the gap we discussed earlier, your return after 20 years is 21 times your original investment.
21 times compared to the index's 6.7. That is staggering.
It really is.
But here is the critical question. What if I miss the floor? What if the market doesn't panic and I have to overpay at, say, 25 times free cash flow instead of 20?
Well, you missed the discount. So you paid a premium relative to the absolute floor. But even with that premium entry price, the business still returned 17 times your original investment over 20 years.
Wow, that specific comparison completely isolates the value of each component. The difference between buying at the gap and buying above the floor is the difference between a 21 times return and a 17 times return.
Yes. When you annualize those numbers over two decades, the gap Benjamin Graham's pure margin of safety is worth exactly 1 percentage point of return annually.
The gap is worth 1%.
Just 1%.
It's valuable, certainly. But the gift, the structural internal compounding of the business, is the engine driving the 17 times return. We spend so much time hunting for the perfect entry price, hunting for that 1%, when the real wealth is generated by the internal engine of the business itself.
The gap is precious. But the gift is what creates generational wealth. And that mathematical reality brings us directly to the third and final layer of the architecture, the guarantee.
Right, the guarantee.
Yeah.
How does this arithmetic translate into a guarantee? Because, you know, in investing, guarantee is a very dangerous word.
Oh, it is, which is why the article connects the arithmetic we just discussed directly to Charlie Munger's principle of convergence.
Okay.
Munger famously observed that over the long term, the return of a stock will inevitably converge to the return the underlying business earns on its own capital.
Right.
The entry price you pay is a temporary condition. The underlying architecture of the business and its ability to compound capital is permanent. That convergence is the guarantee.
The article issues a very clear warning here, though. The guarantee is not a blanket statement applied to any stock in the market.
Definitely not.
It relies on two incredibly strict conditions being met simultaneously. If either condition fails, the guarantee dissolves. Let's talk about the first condition, structural architecture. What separates a structural architecture from just an ordinary good business?
It comes down to inevitability versus effort.
Inevitability versus effort.
Exactly. The article uses companies like Visa or MSCI as prime examples.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the mechanics of Visa. It is an indispensable toll bridge for global commerce.
Right.
Every time a card is swiped at a terminal, Visa extracts a fraction of a cent. That extraction is embedded in the secular flow of the global economy. It operates almost like gravity. The company doesn't need its management team to invent a new blockbuster product every single year to generate that cash flow.
Right. Contrast that with an early stage technology hardware company or, say, a highly competitive retailer. They might be growing rapidly today, but their architecture is fragile.
Very fragile.
A retailer has to perfectly forecast consumer trends, manage complex inventory, and fend off constant price competition from rivals. If the CEO makes one strategic error, the cash flow collapses. Their growth requires flawless, exhausting human execution every single quarter.
Yes.
So the gift of free growth is highly likely to be interrupted.
Exactly. The structural architecture of a Visa or an MSCI means the growth is highly insulated from human error. The closer a business is to pure structural inevitability, the stronger the guarantee.
And the second condition for the guarantee is price. Because even if you find a business with a flawless, impenetrable structural architecture, it cannot overcome a fundamentally irrational entry price.
Munger's principle of convergence is immensely powerful, but it still obeys the basic laws of mathematics. At 20 or 30 times free cash flow, the internal compounding of the business easily overwhelms the entry price over a decade or two. But if you pay 100 times free cash flow, you have broken the math. Even a business growing structurally at 15% annually cannot overcome a starting valuation that extreme within a reasonable human investment horizon.
It's just too steep a hill to climb.
Precisely. The guarantee only functions when a deep structural moat meets a defensible, reasonable valuation.
So if we synthesize this entire framework, the Averaging Up article's true achievement is demonstrating how the free growth premium unifies three seemingly distinct investment philosophies that people often treat as competing strategies.
They aren't competing at all. They are sequential layers of a single architectural framework.
Right.
Benjamin Graham's margin of safety represents the gap buying below the zero growth perpetuity. Warren Buffett's ever-increasing equity coupon represents the gift, the relentless compounding of free cash flow on your original cost. And Charlie Munger's convergence represents the guarantee, the mathematical certainty, that structural architecture will ultimately overwhelm the temporary condition of the entry price.
When you buy a great business below its floor, you get all three. You get the gap, the gift, and the guarantee.
Exactly.
And if you pay above the floor, but at a reasonable price, you sacrifice the gap, but you still secure the gift and the guarantee. If you buy a traditional bond, you get none of them.
The traditional approach to valuation has it completely backward. The typical investor starts by obsessing over the price, tweaking discount rates and terminal multiples, trying to find a mathematical justification for the purchase.
We've all been there.
We have. But the article demands that you invert this process entirely. You must start with the architecture. You confirm the depth of the structural moat. You locate the free growth and verify its inevitability. Only after you have established the certainty of the internal compounding engine do you arrive at the price.
Wow.
The entry price should be the final and, frankly, the smallest variable in your decision-making process.
It's a complete paradigm shift. Start with the architecture, arrive at the price last. Which brings us back to the question we posed at the very beginning. What do you actually receive when you buy a great business? You receive an architectural framework that physically manufactures your return independently of market sentiment.
The gap is precious. The gift is powerful. But the guarantee is everything.
I want to leave you with a final analytical question to mull over as you review your own portfolio. If the ultimate guarantee of an investment return is dictated by the permanence of a business's architecture, look closely at the assets you currently hold. How many of them generate cash flow inevitably, driven by unyielding structural market forces, and how many are precariously dependent on the constant exhausting effort of human execution? The answer to that question determines whether you're holding a guarantee or merely hoping for one. Visit averagingup.com to explore the full collection.